You're listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information. WRFG provides a voice for those who have been traditionally denied access to broadcast media through the involvement of a broad base of community elements to guarantee that access. In the utilization of the Foundation's facilities and in its programs, the following communities will receive first priority: those who continue to be denied free and open access to the broadcast media, and those who suffer oppression or exploitation based upon class, race, sex, age, creed, disability, sexual orientation, or immigrant status.
Time here in WRFG is just after 5 o'clock. John Falstaff with you, bringing you a very special edition of the Celtic Show today. In honor of Black History Month, we have some very special guests for you, including Councilman Kwanzaa Hall. And we'd like you to stay tuned, because we're going to be talking about some interesting cross-cultural connections between Ireland and Scotland and Wales and the African communities worldwide.
Ever since, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Well, if you've been paying attention to news from Ireland, a change has come, a seismic political change. The elections held Friday that were only announced 3 weeks earlier took the ruling party out and completely eliminated the Green Party, who are coalitions with the ruling party. And, well, change is afoot. Let's start off with the band who are coming to town tonight. They are playing a concert at the Wild Wing Cafe in Marietta. They're from Canada. They're an energetic bunch of lads called Enter the Haggis.
Life that's full, everyone's been good to me. So fire up that fiddle, boy, and give me one last drink. When the sun comes up, I will leave without a fight. The world is mine tonight. One last trick. When the sun comes up, I will leave without a fight. The world is mine tonight.
That was Hope to the Suffering from the original incarnation of Riverdance as performed in Ireland and in the UK way back in 1995, I believe, and still going strong 16 years later. That song, unfortunately, is no longer in the set, but it was performed for us there by the Riverdance group with the James Bignon Ensemble from South Atlanta. One of two gospel numbers written by Riverdance Grammy-winning composer Bill Whelan, specifically for the show. The other song is still in the show. We are doing a very special show today, and in the first hour, between now and 6 o'clock, we are going to talk with a special guest in a moment about the Northern Irish Troubles from 40-plus years ago, which ultimately led to the peace agreement of the late 90s, and the role of the teachings and influence of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in that very successful resolution. Also, throughout the show, we'll examine musical influences back and forth from Ireland and the other Celtic lands to many African musical forms. Today, as Ireland grapples with a crippling recession, Irish politician Enda Kenny is poised to become Ireland's next Prime Minister, or Taoiseach, after the election we just mentioned. Interestingly, we interviewed Enda Kenny here live on WRFG from Ireland 15 years ago, and we wish him well as he tries to bring hope to the suffering of the people in Ireland today. A few weeks ago, the Reverend Jesse Jackson visited Dublin and spoke eloquently and perceptively about the rise and fall of the so-called Celtic Tiger. My first special guest today is Jim Gaffey, Irish-American businessman, originally from Brooklyn and a very successful one in the metro Atlanta area. He's lived here for 30 years, but going back further, going back 40-plus years, he found himself in Northern Ireland in August 1969 when things suddenly heated up rather dramatically. Jim, welcome.
Thank you very much, John.
You were in Belfast in August 69, thinking you were just an observer on holiday?
Actually, I arrived on the 15th of August, and I was introduced to some friends. First night, I stayed with Jerry Fitt, who was at that time a member of Parliament. He had to wake us up in the middle of the night because they had commandeered some buses and set them on fire just in front of his house and down at the side of the road, and they had to get us out of there about 2 o'clock in the morning. Spent the rest of the night kind of lounging in his backyard where there was some protection.
And at that point, of course, nobody really had any inkling of the cauldron of despair and fighting, and the next 10, 20, 25 years was pretty rough for the folks in Northern Ireland.
Well, it didn't have to go that way, but unfortunately it did. I was supporting the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association, which had created under its banner a more peaceful way to go about things. Of course, 3 or 4 years later, it broke out into open warfare, but at the beginning, it was modeled directly after the American Civil Rights Movement.
When President Mary McAleese from Ireland was here a few years ago at Emory, most of her remarks addressed the fact that she, as a young person, finding herself in that situation of finding her own community being torn apart, she had to make a decision as to how she was going to deal with it. And obviously different people made different decisions. A name that you encountered, I believe, way, way back, who's still very active in politics today and just got elected, in fact, to represent Louth in the Republic of Ireland, Gerry Adams. He went one direction for many, many years. People like Mary McAleese went another direction. But she spoke about the influence of Martin Luther King. First of all, there was the influence of the civil rights movement, but then when things got very rough, there was the question of how do we deal with it and how we respond, I guess, and especially after Bloody Sunday in January 1972.
Well, John, publicity was given to the actions of people who violently responded, but throughout there were people who absolutely refused to go to violence, particularly political groups like the SDLP, John Hume, who went on to win the Nobel Peace Prize, and other prizes which I'd like to touch on.
Sure.
But I would have been a personal friend of John and Pat Hume's and been in their houses as far as 1970. So there was an element of the society that never switched to violence. Unfortunately, like most things, media is drawn to the violent aspects.
Of course.
Not making light of it. 3,800 people died in a physical area the size of Connecticut with a population of about 1.7 million people.
Right.
If you did that, a percentage of about 380,000 people in the United States would have been killed over a period of time. Tragedy. But at the beginning, it was defined specifically as a civil rights movement under the banner of the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association. I have the honor at the time of being an observer, being paid to go over, not myself, but the funds or the expenses by the Transportation Workers Union of New York City. They wanted to send people in who could write back. Frankly, I came back and testified in front of the United States Congress, in front of Congressman Hugh Carey's committee, attempting to bring positive attention to the situation.
Now, one of the names that was very prominent in politics back there was a very young woman called Bernadette Devlin.
Yes.
Who got elected as an MP to Westminster at a very young age, first Catholic female, certainly in that period, to do so.
Yes, quite a woman.
You got to meet her and work with her, and you were involved in one of the trips she made to the U.S.?
Yeah, in fact, the first time we brought her in, of course, the governmental agencies weren't paying for it, so we had to raise all the money ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been involved in an original campaign, which was the rebuilding of Bombay Street. Many things in Iraq and on our Mexican border, you have these walls
mm-hmm.
or flashpoints.
Right.
And the Bombay Street was right at a junction between the two communities and was mm-hmm. burnt down one night.
Mm-hmm.
So we went ahead, and this is 1968-1969 terms, we raised $63,000 to bring over. In fact, there's a plaque on the rebuilding of those small, almost tenement-like houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that led other people to say, okay, this guy knows how to do this, so how do we get Bernadette here? Yeah, we got her to New York and then traveled down literally by train down to Washington, where she addressed members of Congress. You know, she's quite a gal and still is today.
And she, I believe, was given the keys of the city?
She was given the key to the city of New York one day, and the next day, without kind of coming to us, I'm not sure whether I'd have an opinion one way or the other, but she held a press conference and gave it to the Black Panthers. And that created quite an uproar.
That would have got some attention.
Especially in the Irish community. It brought in politics someplace, an area that I try to stay away from. But we quickly, you know, screened her away from that. And she was back in Belfast and Derry a couple of days later.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it might be a good time to bring in our second special guest for today. We're delighted to have Atlanta City Councilman Kwanzaa Hall.
It's just great to be here. Thank you all for having me.
Thanks all for coming down. Now, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Southwest Atlanta. I'm the child of Leon and Evelyn Hall, and my father and mother both worked in civil rights. My father was hailed from Montgomery, Alabama, and was kicked out of high school for organizing and ended up being the youngest member of Dr. King's staff from 1963 to 68.
How many of the folks involved in the civil rights movement here would have realized the impact that Dr. King had outside of the U.S.?
I think after Dr. King received, and just up to receiving the Nobel
right.
Peace Prize, it really was when it hit the world stage, and folks all over the world saw copies of his speeches in various languages. You saw the speeches, and you might have seen the recent exhibit at the Atlanta History Center where there may have been 40 versions mm-hmm. in various languages of his speeches. And as they started hitting other parts of the world, I think people adopted those ideals and began to spread nonviolence as a concept for social change throughout communities. And of course, young people were the ones who adopted it, as we're seeing around the world right now. Young people are using nonviolence. They're using the grapevine, in this case, is social media.
Absolutely.
And their youth.
Right, their energy. It's funny because people often assume that, you know, far-flung corners of the earth are kind of remote. And even in a day long before the internet, 40, 50 years ago, Ireland was very susceptible to all sorts of American influences. Pop music, blues, jazz, we're going to hear a little about that as we move forward here. But the traffic went both ways, even, as I said before, long before the internet or social media.
Yes.
I think what I'd like to add in is some of the baselines that are very similar to the baselines here. For example, the original demands of the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association, one man, one vote. In Northern Ireland at that time, unless you were a ratepayer, a taxpayer,
mm-hmm.
you could not vote.
Mm-hmm.
So their first demand was one man, one vote. If you were 21 years old, you could vote.
Right.
And then the discrimination in housing.
Right.
Unless you were from certain families, you could not get proper housing.
Right.
And also gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how many times in places like Alabama and Mississippi where gerrymandering mm-hmm. was arranged, and it still goes on
still goes on.
Some areas that I don't want to touch on
sure.
here in this state. Well, gerrymandering eliminated one half of the community in Northern Ireland. So people say, gee, it was a violent place. At the beginning, it was very, very
right.
minor demands.
And also, of course,
one man, one vote, the key one.
Unemployment discrimination, because Northern Ireland, in contrast to the Republic, was a very heavily industrialized country, going back several hundred years.
That's
it didn't
correct.
Really catch up in the South until the 1960s.
No.
And the shipyards, in particular in Belfast, no. you couldn't get a good job there unless you were Protestant.
Harlan and Wolff shipyards, yeah.
And the linen industry.
So my experience previous to that was in the American Civil Rights Movement in the Northeast. I would have also been lucky enough to be picked and worked in political campaigns, including at the time Attorney General Bobby Kennedy, and wound up as an advance man for him in places that I knew, Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy, Harlem, and other areas. So that experience then propelled me into Northern Ireland through my own experience, which was parents born in Ireland with direct derivatives in my family mm-hmm. in Northern Ireland. And
sure.
it was the next step for me was different than the steps for other people who were involved here.
Right.
So to go back to Northern Ireland to actually try to do something about it.
And I'd like to add, I was just reading an article in the New York Times with Tom Chafin, and it was about Frederick Douglass in the 1800s going over to Ireland and discussing abolition and trying to end slavery, and that was a place that was very receptive. So I think, in particular, people struggling for freedom, wherever they've been, and struggling mm-hmm. for human dignity, always figure ways to connect. So if you can go as far back as 1800s,
sure.
you could look at the 20s, you can look at song and dance and how entertainers would carry messages across the pond
sure.
to spread the word about peace and nonviolent movements and struggles for human justice. And then even today, when I think about how powerful the music of U2 is, and when I think of Bloody Sunday and some of the songs mm-hmm. they've done, and how it not only has a meaning for those who worked in the civil rights movement, but also for all the families in Northern Ireland who had to struggle as well. So there's just this intertwinedness, and I'm so glad that we're coming together around it. John Hume was here in Atlanta, yeah. and we're just building on this partnership. The new Irish consulate is here in Atlanta.
Absolutely.
This is great for all of us.
It's moving forward. It's interesting you mentioned Frederick Douglass, because I only found out recently that Douglassville, Georgia, is actually named after him, but yes. the spelling was changed so that people wouldn't know that.
Yes.
But that's the whole of the story. Let's take a little musical break here. The pipe band we heard from earlier was the Atlanta Pipe Band, and they are doing a concert. We heard a track from them called Steam Train to Malik from their album Phoenix Rising. They're doing a concert this coming Saturday, the 5th of March. It's at 7, it's early, and it's in the auditorium at Oglethorpe University, the Atlanta Pipe Band, celebrating 40 years of music making. Special guests would include Tom McNeil, a fabulous Cape Breton keyboard player, and also some Highland dancers and our very own Celtic kudzu. If you would like a pair of tickets to see the Atlanta Pipe Band during the next musical break, please give me a call down here, 404-523-8989. I'm going to play you an entertaining little number now from a rather famous gentleman called Louis Armstrong. This was recorded on a 78 way back in 1926. And it's a kind of a hypothetical story about a dance called the Irish Black Bottom, which apparently was related to the Charleston. The hypothetical part is he claims that the people were doing it all over Ireland. Not sure about that, but enjoy anyway.
Put it over with a wow. I mean now, all over Ireland. the people dancing in. Cause I done gone black bottom crazy now.
Instruments tuned and ready, folks. WRFG is making preparations for the 35th annual Peach Blossom Bluegrass Festival to be held April 2nd at the Clarkston Community Center. Announcements of artist lineup and ticket information will be coming soon. There's also opportunity for you if you are a vendor who deals in arts, crafts, information, or novelties to display and sell your wares. If you're interested in being a vendor at the festival, please contact WRFG Business Office at 404-523-3471, Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make plans now for the 35th Annual Peach Blossom Bluegrass Festival. Thank you.
Well, we started off as promised with Louis Armstrong doing the Irish Black Bottom, a record recorded back in 1926. Then we had Paddy Keenan doing the Cuckoo's Nest from his Na Cinn Na Fear album. Now, Paddy Keenan is one of the other artists coming to town. We've got so many concerts, we'll just run through some of them for you here, lest we forget later. Paddy Keenan's doing a show at Eddie's Attic on Wednesday, the 16th of March. That's the day before St. Patrick's Day. On St. Patrick's Day, you know you can rely on our old friends, the Buddy O'Reilly Band, to be doing several sets at Eddie's Attic on the 17th. The march itself on the 19th, which is a Saturday. David Munley, the Bullet from Balmullet on the accordion, and Mac Dara from Inishere on the Aran Islands will be doing a double bill at Eddie's. And Enter the Haggis, as we mentioned, are doing an all-ages show tonight at 9 p.m. at the Wild Wing Cafe in Marietta. Atlanta Pipe Band, March the 5th at 7 p.m. We have just given away two pairs of tickets. We'll have one more pair of tickets to give away at the end of the show, so please don't call in until then for those. Trash Can Sinatras from Edinburgh are at Smith's Old Bar on Monday the 7th. Danu, wow, this is a biggie. We didn't know about this one until this week. Danu are doing a show on the 11th of March, but it is in Athens. It's at the Hodgson Concert Hall at the University of Georgia at Athens. The very same night, the 11th, Friday, and the 12th, the Chieftains are at the Atlanta Symphony Hall. Wow. So much good music coming up. Okay, we finished up there with Give Me That Old Time Religion, and that was sung for us by the London Welsh Festival of Male Choirs. We are speaking with our special guests, Jim Gaffey and City Councilman Kwanza Hall. While we were off mic there, we were talking about the fact that while the peace process came to a very successful conclusion in the 1990s, it wasn't just influence. There were people who went back and forward in the 70s. Jim, obviously, was clued into some of that.
Yeah, I had some unique experiences in that we had contact through resources in the American community, and we approached Dr. Ralph David Abernathy and asked whether he would come over and lend his name and his influence, much like he had done around the world. And he wasn't able to travel, but Mrs. Ralph David Abernathy and her daughter and some other members of the family came over and experienced both Belfast and Derry. I wasn't there at that particular time. I was in New York trying to coordinate it and raise the funds for it. But they really had a very, very positive impact. And they were, and others were, trying to stop this drift towards the violent side.
And this would have been around 73 or 74.
Earlier than that, 72.
Yeah.
But once it turned violent, many of us drifted off. It just became just a tough thing to deal with.
There were people like John Hume for the SDLP who just stayed true to the course.
Yeah.
In the mid-90s, then there was this hope of peace, negotiations between, you know, the British leaders, Irish leaders, and the Northern Irish all together, which wouldn't have been remotely conceivable. I mean, if you think back to the era of Margaret Thatcher in the early 80s,
yeah.
She, like Ian Paisley, had a kind of a bunker mentality, no surrender.
A draconian response. But what Hume did, it took a tremendous risk. He got in the back of the car one day and went off to negotiate with the IRA for 2 or 3 days. That was a tremendous personal risk. It led eventually to a break, and of course President Bill Clinton was heavily involved.
Absolutely.
In making sure things would go right if we could get them here. I was very peripherally involved, but very aware of almost everything that was going on through friends, associates, mm-hmm. and the like.
So a lot of people took risks. I mean, John Hume took a personal, physical, political risk. The Irish Prime Minister at the time and the British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, obviously, and Bertie Ahern also risked the wrath of their constituents. And Bill Clinton took a risk which wasn't appreciated at the time by the British consulate.
I would also say personal risk, because I know the environments that they were going into. It's a relatively small country, including geographically small.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're taking tremendous risk to go out and speak in public, to stand mm-hmm. on the steps at City Hall in Belfast, as President Clinton did. But as well, John Hume, because of his work, and including David Trimble from, mm-hmm. let's just say, the other side of the community,
sure.
might notice mm-hmm. that I never used the terms that mm-hmm. people would like to use,
mm-hmm.
because I always sensed from the very beginning that it was just economic, and that it was really class warfare, and not associated with, it was like, how to keep the other guy down. And from that, John Hume was given not only the Nobel Peace Prize in 1998, along with David Trimble,
mm-hmm.
one of the co-signers,
mm-hmm.
but in 1999, he was given the Martin Luther King Prize for nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on in 2001, and I hope I have those dates right, to win the Gandhi Prize for Peace and Nonviolence. So John Hume, from his effort of getting into the back of a car, someone told me it was in the back of a boot, I'm not sure about that, mm-hmm. to go off to meet with the IRA, you know, who at that time would, you know, he would mm-hmm. be a target.
Absolutely.
Led to him being the only person in history to have ever won those three prizes.
And you spent some time with John Hume, especially when he was in Atlanta picking up the King Award.
It meant the world to him, because you have to go back to the genesis of one man, one vote, and him in a room with half a dozen other people, Malachi McGurran, these other people that I got to know as a very mm-hmm. young guy. I mean, I'd be sitting around the room and these people would be talking about this, and it sounded very euphemistic, but they had the vision. But more importantly, I brought him here again in 2007, and he spoke at five of the universities. I mean, he had one of the largest mm-hmm. crowds mm-hmm. that Georgia State ever had. He suffers from a kind of debilitating situation. It's more like post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know, there's 17 documented attempts on his life mm-hmm. in that period of time.
Wow.
And those are the documented ones.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah.
living in his... He never moved out of his home. He absolutely refused to. So mm-hmm. you tell about a... I might have kind of went off into working for Bell South or
right.
like that. He stayed true
right.
to the very last.
To his people, to his
moment,
house, to his community.
To his people.
Yeah.
To,
yeah.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, I think one of my favorite quotes from Martin Luther King was, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And when you speak of risk-taking and people being willing to put their lives on the line for what is right, I think of folks who would go to Alabama, in the dark parts of Alabama, to Mississippi, and to go and organize, you know, before the media got there, in the same way that so many people have done in Ireland and other parts of the world. And so I think as we here in Atlanta attempt to and embark upon the building of the new Center for Civil and Human Rights, we hope to not only, one, memorialize these stories about all the people from around the world who have worked and risked their lives for social justice and social change, but also to be a place where we can have these discussions to get people on the right page, to do the right thing in the various countries around the world. And I'm in, you know, requesting that you all be a part of it and help us to do it. We need you.
Well, thank you. Let's take another little musical break here, and then we will return and conclude our discussion with our special guest, Jim Gaffey, and Atlanta City Councilman Kwanzaa Hall. We're so delighted you gentlemen have joined us today. Van Morrison grew up in Belfast, listening to American Forces Radio, and his parents' record collection, which included huge amounts of blues and R&B. What Van has done since the late 60s speaks for itself. He's obviously done in records with bluesmen, famous bluesmen like John Lee Hooker and so on, and his Moonlight song from 1969 is as perfect and seductive a pop jazz song as has ever been written, for my money. But I want to draw your attention to an extraordinary recording he made as a younger man back in 1966, and this, to me, is just one of the best things he's ever done. You may be familiar with the name Screaming Jay Hawkins. He was a very original, interesting American performer who actually started his life wishing to follow the footsteps of Paul Robeson and be a bass baritone singer. In 1949, he was the middleweight boxing champion of Alaska, although he was from Cleveland originally. And with this recording we're about to hear, I think Van Morrison showed, and this is some 45 years ago, that he was a heavyweight and a real contender. This is absolutely sublime. This is I Put a Spell on You, as you probably haven't heard it before. Take it away, Van.
You're mine. You better stop the things you do. And I ain't lying. No, I ain't lying. I can't stand it. You're running around. You should know better, mama. I can't stand it since you put me down. I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. heartbeat. I said I'm yours right now. I put a spell on you because you're mine.
بین خمار خگون دخوار بین خمار خگون دخوار این خمار خگون دخوار که باخم مینی ویمان واهرین لکتون نینم ما واهرین لکتون نینم ما واهرین لکتون نینم ما وونی نو نهیلیه نیل تو جنان هی نکوز نیل تو جنان هی نکوز نیل تو جنان هی نکوز نرویز تو تری جبای تو ما واهرین لکتون نینم ما واهرین لکتون نینم ما واهرین لکتون نینم ما وونی نو نهیلیه برنم هین مگریسی بروک برنم هین مگریسی بروک برنم هین مگریسی بروک نه فکر خرم نه نلار سیار واهرین لکتون نینم ما واهرین لکتون نینم ما واهرین لکتون نینم ما وونی نو نهیلیه بین خمار خدون دخوار بین خمار خدون دخوار که با خمینی بینم باری نلکتون نیمم باری نلکتون نیمم باری نلکتون نیمم بونی نام هیلی بین خمار خدون دخوار بین خمار خدون دخوار بین خمار خدون دخوار که با خمینی
David Munley and friends there, and a track called The Mac Jigs, M-A-C, not to be confused with the PC Jigs, and that's from their album Tight Squeeze. They are playing at Eddie's Attic on Saturday the 19th, which I guess is only 3 weeks away now. Before that, we heard MacDara with a famous song from County Clare, Big Aina Camorach, from his album The Love Token. He is opening the show with the Munley folks, and we started off with Van Morrison and them, and a wonderful rendition of Screamin' Jay Hawkins' I Put a Spell on You, from the second Them album, which came out in 1966. Back to our special guests, and we were just mentioning that there's another gentleman who's also connected with all this, and that would be Andrew Young.
Yes, absolutely. First, I just want to say kudos on the excellent music selection today. This has been great. But Ambassador Young surely does have a special tie. He's one of our great leaders here in Atlanta and around the world, and he's been former mayor of Atlanta, but he hails from New Orleans, and his family was surely tied to the Irish community there, and he was one of the leaders in Atlanta that also could sing and dance quite a number of Irish songs and jigs. So Ambassador Young is one of our leaders that we love dearly. And Jim, I think you also had a strong relationship
with
him.
Yeah, he made some interesting introductions for us at the beginning, but two very unique people helped me start the activities that I was involved in. One was Arthur Blank, you know, a Queens-raised boy. Went on to do things like the Home Depot and the Falcons, but he made all the initial introductions. And Andrew Young said, I'd help in any way. He said, I love the Irish. He goes to Ireland every other year. But because of their work and the original efforts that were impacted by Dr. Martin Luther King, the first ever trade mission from Ireland, which combined the Dublin Chamber of Commerce and the Northern Ireland Chamber of Commerce. And this is before there was a full peace treaty and a government in 2007. That first trade mission traveled together to one place, and that was Atlanta. So you had the Dublin Chamber and the Northern Chamber, never having traveled any place in the world together before, and they came to Atlanta in 2004.
For listeners who aren't aware of it, just 10 days ago, the new Irish consulate opened here, which is a huge statement, imprimatur, approval of the Irish government. And, of course, it does mean that there's now an Irish government presence in Atlanta, which hopefully will lead to other good things.
Yes, and just going back, I just looked at another quote from Frederick Douglass dating back to 1845 when he went to Ireland, and he talked about Black-Irish solidarity. And I quote him, "There are hearts beating in unison with our own." And at that time, of course, Irish were immigrants in the U.S.,
Absolutely.
So felt the pain of not only having to struggle to get here, but also to integrate into American society. So the difficulty is shared on both sides. And then I want to also quote Bernadette Delvin, who said, watching King on TV in 1968, as a 19-year-old radicalized person and who kind of got touched by this, she said, "I saw what happens to people who ask for little. They get less." And, of course, this is also very relevant to the Middle East today. So our interconnectedness here with the U.S. and with Ireland, in particular the African-American community, runs very deep. And I hope that we can build upon this as a group and continue this type of dialogue. I think that it's very fitting.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned 1845, because a couple of years later, of course, the Great Famine hit Ireland, and there was another wave, the most famous wave of emigration, and a lot of it landed here. Well, did some of it land in a part of Atlanta not very far from where we sit today?
Absolutely.
What do we know about that?
Yes, all over Georgia, of course, all over.
John, a lot of things around the South have this Irish influence. Of course, they were here to build the railroads. Mm-hmm. They were here to build the canals. They came up from Savannah. Of course, they were imported through Mobile, Alabama, through New Orleans, the Irish Quarter. Algiers is full of Irish to this day. And that impact, even things like Auburn University, which takes their name from the original town of Auburn, which takes their name from an Irish poem called The Deserted Village.
Right.
And even the mascot, the Tigers, within the poem, it says, "Where tigers lay in wait." And that's where the mascot
came
from.
I think we have traced the origins of the Celtic tiger. 1770. Oliver Goldsmith wrote that poem in 1770.
In fact, the councilman and I are looking into not to try to take Sweet Auburn away from anybody else, but the Irish lived downtown when they were the railroad builders and the like, and these communities drift on and change and the like. So who knows where Auburn Avenue came from. But there's a line in the poem that says, "Sweet, sweet Auburn, Auburn, sweet Auburn."
Beautiful.
So there is these interflows. You know, the subsets of the interflows within communities are there, and they're undeniable. But we put political structures in place to keep people from working with one another.
Well, I'd like to thank both you gentlemen for joining us today. Mr. Jim Gaffey, entrepreneur, businessman, honorable Irish-American. You've achieved much, and we thank you for your efforts in helping to bring the Irish consulate here. And Councilman Kwanzaa Hall, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thanks, gentlemen. We're going to move on now with a Scottish piece of music, which is also influenced by, well, not by what's going on in Wisconsin today, but it all kind of ties in. This is a Labour song relating to minor solidarity, but the musical style might surprise you. It's one of my favourite songs, and the singing is by the wonderful, late-lamented Davy Steele. This is Keolbeg and Stand Together.
United we're as strong as a mountain. United we're as deep as the sea. Stand together, shoulder to shoulder, sisters and brothers, united and free.
To the full.